All right, Wolf, we've moved outside.
Yeah, finally. Man, nice. This is I needed some warmth. I'm in Hawaii, and I still don't see the sun, and it's getting better. Okay, now I'm at the Starbucks outside.
Excellent. So, who are we going to talk to?
Hi, Charles. Hi. It's my pleasure to introduce you to Victor Pankriatsis, and he's the head of the Young Investigator Group on Software Engineering and Multicore.
Nice.
And since now we have, in some sense, multi-core chips in all our desktops and in our servers for a long time, I was wondering whether we could chat a little bit with Victor and see what's going on in the multi-core area.
Excellent.
Thank you, Wolfram, for inviting me to the show.
Perfect.
So, Victor, so we have already multi-core on the server, and now we have it also in the client on all our laptops and also in the mobile phones. So what's the difference if you program one or the other?
So, first of all, I think it's a revolution to have multi-core today in every desktop computer and even in the mobile phones in your pocket, because it's truly parallel machine that's affordable for everyone. And the difference is that you now have like a whole new area of applications for parallels that no one would have ever thought before. So think of applications that run on your desktop, like desktop search engines, virus scanners, office applications, business intelligence applications that run on your desktop. Now you have a lot of potential to use parallelism and speed those applications up. And that's a different application scenario on your desktop compared to the server.
So I understand that in some sense parallelizing on the server is often relatively easy because it's either embarrassingly parallel, you replicate the processes, or you use something like MapReduce. So compared to the client, so what's really the challenge in the client? So why is it more difficult to speed up Word or anything else that you want to do on the client?
Yeah, so many of the applications on the client don't exhibit this kind of potential to parallelize like on the server. So you cannot simply take instances and replicate instances and run that on your client, because it also depends on your application. You'd also have to look at more fine granular parallelism in comparison to servers. You can now look, for example, at intra-query parallelism for database queries, whereas on the server, you would just take queries and execute several queries in parallel, but each query sequentially.
Okay, so that sounds really like a fun project. So what you're saying is, you have one particular approach to parallelize, for example, queries on the server by just having more SQL servers available, whereas now you look in for the desktop, or you look inside a single query, and then you start parallelizing that query.
Exactly.
So how does it work, and how is it? How does it change when you have different workloads, or if you have different cache line behavior? So how do you get, in some sense, the optimal execution on multi-core for query processing, for example?
Yes, that's an excellent question, and that's also a very tough question to answer in a general way, so that's why you need an adaptive approach. So we did several experiments where we can show that it's different to find a one-size-fits-all solution. So what we did was to use an auto-tuning approach to parallelize queries on multi-core. And there are several reasons why you need auto-tuning. So first of all, your hardware is very different. So even though it appears that you just buy a simple multi-core computer, if you look at the processors, then you have different architectures for caches. So for example, how big your caches are, how the cache architecture is, and so on. But then the whole software stack that might be different, that is on a particular system. Then in addition, you might have changes in your environment. So you might run one query, but at the same time other processes might start other queries. So you have to adapt to that as well. Then you have the types of queries that you're executing. So some queries might have different properties than other creeps. So you have all these factors that impact your performance, which is why you have to basically individually tune particular queries on one platform, and you don't want to do that manually. So that is why you need an automatic approach to do that for you, and that's what we did with auto-tuning.
I think auto-tuning sounds absolutely fantastic. To me, it seems that I don't have to do much thinking, but let me understand how auto-tuning works. It's not like I'll generate a random set of permutations of all my controllable variables, like what the index size is. So how do you learn what the auto-tuner really does? How does it work?
Yeah. So there are a couple of strategies you can follow there. What we did was we started with the premise that we don't want to do a complete rewrite of database systems, because you might get more leverage by starting from scratch, but you guys know you put a lot of effort into SQL Server. You don't want to write the whole optimizer from scratch. So what you would like to have is like an incremental approach that you can basically add like a module to your optimizer and introduce multi-threaded parallelism. And that's what we did, and where we actually were successful to accomplish. So what we do is we start with sequential query class, and then we parallelize in several phases how this query is beginning to be multi-threaded and executed in parallel. So first of all, we have own parallel operators that can get replaced. So in your query plan, you can replace, for example, sequential hash joins, by multi-threaded double pipeline hash joins.
See.
And then you additionally lay out a multi-threaded pipeline structure on your sequential query plan. But that's not enough, because you cannot necessarily do that statically. Now you have to adapt at which places you're using your multi-threaded hash joins, because it might not pay off in every place. You might have too much overhead, for example, on a sequential machine to use a multi-threaded hash join. So you need adaptation there that the auto-tuner needs to do for you. In addition, you want to change the size of these multi-threaded pipelines on your query plan to be able to keep a constant flow of tuples that come from your relations that you want to join. And this is what we did, so we can automatically exchange on a particular platform the joins and other operators in your query plan, and automatically adapt these parallel pipeline structures, so then we can actually get speed-ups for join-intensive queries on multiple.
So if I understand correctly, what you're really trying to do then is, in some sense, you have an auto-tuner for query plans. If you wanted to have an auto-tuner for other applications, you would actually have to start from scratch. So in some sense, it's an auto-tuner that's application-specific and not general purpose. Is that correct?
That's how we started. However, we've continued this line of work because we realized that auto-tuning is really important. So what we did was we integrated an auto-tuner into the operating system. And we already have a first prototype with a Linux operating system that is modified to include an auto-tuner. And that gives you a couple of advantages. So first of all, you can do a global optimization of every application that is running on your system. So you can, in contrast to an auto-tuner that tunes just one application, you tune the total system. In addition, you can tune applications simultaneously while they are running. And we have actually case studies showing that this is possible. For example, for compression or multimedia, we tune the applications while they are running. And in addition, having the auto-tuner inside the operating system, we're able to draw upon information that is available inside the kernel on system state, for example, that we can use for tuning.
We
are very fast.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
we have little overhead because we are already in the kernel.
We don't have
to go through all the layers and extract that potentially useful information.
Okay, that sounds super cool. Seems my life gets easier while we speak.
Yeah.
So let me understand this. So if there are let's say, application developers still today, then as far as I know, you also studied is what are, in some sense, the traditional benchmarks to measure performance of multi-core systems, and how are actually people using multi-core systems if they want to have improvements. So is there any insight? Do this do benchmarks actually, are they good predictors of what people then actually will achieve in reality, or how do benchmarks and real-life systems compare?
Yeah, so most of the benchmarks we have right now really focus on numerics, on scientific applications. For example, on how fast you can multiply matrices, on how fast you can do fast Fourier transform, or how fast you can process signals. Unfortunately, we looked also at realistic applications like business applications and didn't find any of these kernels in those applications.
Yeah.
Which means that we are pretty in a worse situation than I thought, because the benchmarks we have right now don't really match with the new application areas we have. So I really hope that researchers out there see this show and realize that it's important to develop new benchmarks. I think it's a good direction to see people developing graph benchmarks. So the top500.org that really focuses on linear algebra now might be transformed by the top graph500.org, who presents benchmarks for graph computations.
Because you
can do a lot with parallel graph computations, for example, to analyze social networks, which is a big thing today. Not only for research, but I think there are also pretty many business opportunities to analyze social networks. And multicore is definitely a leverage for that.
Yeah, I strongly concur. But on the other hand, you brought up in terms of these massive data that we have today. And so multicore is still a shared memory on a single box. So how do our programming models evolve that we can do nicely, in some sense, distribute massive data over a cloud or a grid or whatever architecture you use for your distributed systems.
Right.
Do you work in the same area, and can we take some of the learnings that we had in the multi-core and move it forward to the cloud?
So one thing I think is particularly interesting is to combine different programming paradigms in the same language. So for example, I think that C# is doing a great job to combine declarative aspects with imperative aspects. So for example, if you look at the link and plink, it pretty much looks like a declarative SQL query, which is embedded into your regular imperative code. And dealing with massive data sets is basically specifying things in declarative ways. You don't really want to specify how to move pointers around and navigate through your data. What you want to say is, I want to query some data with specific properties, and then you get the result. And then you might want to process this data somehow in another way, so that's why combining this declarative aspect with imperative, with an imperative language, is so useful. And I think this is something that we should definitely work on, and that is an approach that can make programming in the cloud with massive data sets, as well as programming on multi-core, a lot easier.
Okay, so since I work for Microsoft, I might have to say that of course we pushed link quite on individual boxes and for multi-core, and now we have Dryad Link that in some sense adds another layer of description on top of C# and link in order to describe task dependencies on the cloud. So hopefully we'll see that this will be picked up. It's a little bit more flexible than MapReduce, which is also a great model. But in some sense, it goes one step further and does exactly what you're saying, is combining declarative and imperative concepts for the cloud.
Yeah. So maybe you can add some other insight to this. So one thing where we need more support is task parallelism. Parallelism in programming languages has mostly been supported for loops.
Yeah.
So we have approaches that let you easily parallelize for loops, for example. However, that works very well for scientific applications where
the work is actually in the loops. But if you look at other applications, you have to look for loops, but you find loops, but they don't really have the entire program working. Data parallelism is also applicable in a very focused way if the problem is structured like that. But what you really need is support for task parallelism. So constructs that allow you to create tasks and then runtimes that allow you to deal with those tasks and schedule those tasks dynamically, so you don't really need to care about the details.
Yeah, yeah.
And we need definitely more work in this.
Well, we have the task parallel library, which is what they built async on top of.
Right.
But of course, async really isn't about concurrency.
Yeah.
It's about not locking while doing things. It actually isn't running in parallel.
Right.
So there is a bunch of work. Stephen Tobe has done some great stuff. People know him from Channel 9.
Yeah.
So the TPL is actually really interesting. If you haven't played around, I'm sure
definitely,
you have.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. I actually teach TPL already.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But so that really leads to this question: what do you mean we need more work in it? It's not perfect, but you want it to be a first-class citizen in the language beyond async.
Yeah, but you can also think of design patterns, right? So if you design big systems, usually also think in terms of design patterns. So for example, my application is structured like a pipeline here, so I want to have constructs expressing this pipeline structure in an easy way. Mm-hmm. I want to have constructs expressing what is inside a pipeline stage in an easy way, and maybe even derive the tasks automatically based on those patterns.
Mm.
So that's why I think from a software engineering point of view, there's a lot more to be done rather than just at the lower level where you say, this is one single task. Oh. Yeah, so you will have like billions of tasks if you have a complex parallel program. And you don't want to specify billions of tasks by hand. You want some automation to help you with that.
Mm-hmm. The task parallel runtime, TPR.
Yeah, right? That sounds good. So maybe to wrap it up, so what is the thing that you are most excited about that you want to work on next that you think will change, in some sense, the life of software engineers if they use multi-core? Do we need more education? Do we need more tools? Do we need auto-tuners? Do we need more programming languages? What is it? Do we need all of it?
So I'd say we need all of it because we are now in a new situation. We can redefine computer science. We can look at the entire software engineering process in the light of parallelism. So answering this question, just saying, we need just auto-tuners, is just part of the solution. Of course we need more education. I know from my own experience that students are really excited about multi-core and want to learn more. And they want also to learn about the details, and somebody has to teach them to deal with the complexity. So of course we need more education. We need better tools. So like in sequential software engineering, we never stop at a certain level, so we continue to make progress, which is also what we have to do here. So basically, everything where you advance sequential software engineering, you also need to do to advance parallel software engineering.
Mm. Okay. Interesting. That sounds like a great conclusion.
Yes.
We'll see a big change coming up. And in some sense, it's already happening. We have the course, and we will have soon many, many more coming along. So thanks a lot, Victor, for your time and your insights. And good luck with scaling out and parallelizing.
Thank you very much.
And good luck for when they have the GPUs and the CPUs on the same die.
It's already there.
Yeah. All right, and you have multiple of each, and you have to deal with all of the cache insanity.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You have a bright future, man. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wolfram, again.
Thanks a lot. It was fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.